The Fourth Tower of Inverness. Within the mysterious tower, Jack Flanders has found a remarkable land with some remarkable beings. Yesterday, you may remember hearing,
"I give up. You win."
But then his hand touches an object round and smooth and cold that rests upon the forest floor. And when he peeks through the thick net of black hair that covers him, he sees that the object is a skull wearing a pith helmet.
"Holy Toledo! Look at this!"
What? And she seizes him by the arm and shakes him violently.
"Oh, you! What do you have inside that chest? Crumpled newspaper instead of a heart, that all my beauty cannot touch you?"
"It's that skull with the pith helmet cocked over one hole where an eye ought to be."
"I know that I am beautiful, and there is no beauty like mine in all the world."
"That's irrelevant. The point is this skull here with the pith."
"Irrelevant!"
Then Ulupi screams like a wounded elephant.
"I just want to know whose head this is. I'm looking for a person by the name of Sir Henry Gels, as well as the land of the Lotus Jukebox, and I want to know."
"Fool! You'll never see that Lotus land."
"Oh, boy."
And she looks at him with a jeering laugh. And instantly sits down and winds herself up in her long hair and begins to weep. And as she weeps, the tears run down from her eyes like a river and fall into the lake. Immediately, the lake begins to rise and swell and flood the wood with water.
"Good grief!"
And as he stands gazing at her with astonishment, he finds himself standing in a vast marsh with the trees of the forest for rushes.
"Wow!"
And as he looks, suddenly that deluring daughter of a demon becomes a mist and floats away over the water like a vapor. And he is left alone in the wood with the water up to his waist. And as the water keeps on rising and rising, Jack says to himself,
"Oh boy, I've seen women cry before, but whoever saw tears like this?"
The pith helmet comes floating by and he reaches out cautiously, expecting just about anything to be floating beneath.
"This pith helmet is still in good shape. It looks safe enough. There's nothing inside it. I wonder if... it's a little big, but I've always wanted to try wearing one of these things. Wait a minute. What are these initials? S.H.J. S.H.J. Sir Henry Gels. Good Lord, this water is still rising. I better find a tree, and quick."
Jack climbs up into a tree and looks out over the water, on which the mist hangs in the moonlight like a curtain of fine spun silver on a floor of glass.
"Is this merely an illusion? But I'm soaking wet and the water keeps rising. I've got to climb higher into this tree."
So he climbs up and up, and as he climbs, the water rises after him, higher and higher, until at last he can see nothing but the water and the moon and the tree that stretch above him into the sky.
"Well, that raft sure would come in handy. I don't know. Eventually I'm going to run out of tree, and then I've had it."
So he continues to climb and climb while the water rises and the moon sinks and the night gradually comes to an end. And then the sun rises over the eastern mountain and begins, like himself, to climb into the sky. And the sweat pours from his limbs, and at last he stops, overcome with fatigue. And he says to himself,
"Oh, I've had it. I just can't climb another branch. That's all, folks."
And as he looks down, suddenly he sees before him no water and no tree. And his head grows dizzy and his vision swims. And he can scarcely believe his eyes.
"Good Lord. I'm standing on the peak of a mountain. Hallelujah."
But all around him, and all before him and behind, is a vast desert of burning sand that stretches away to the very limit of the range of sight. And it glows in the fire of the sun's rays like a furnace, and is furrowed and pitted with holes and chasms. And as he watches, its surface rises and falls like a woman's breast. And it looks as if it were alive, though in truth, it looks more like the home of death.
They sure don't fool around in these parts.
And as he gazes, he sees living things, the color of sand, that crawl swiftly on all fours, and sometimes stand up on their back legs and sniff the air, standing still except for their tails that never rest. And sometimes they blend into the sand until only their bright eyes stand out, watching. And it seems to Jack that all those hideous eyes seek him out and fasten on him and rest on him alone, saying to him, as it were, "Let's see you get out of this one." Jack Flanders has discovered a strange land within the Fourth Tower. After experiencing adventures too numerous to relate at this point, he found himself upon a mountaintop. All around was a vast desert with nasty little creatures that darted in and out of holes in the sand and watched him and waited for him.
Well, let's see. What choice do I have in this situation? I can either stay up here and die of starvation, or go down there and be torn to shreds by those little creatures. Not much of a choice, if you ask me.
And so all day he remains on that high place, not daring to descend. And at length the sun goes to rest and the moon rises and reflects in the bright eyes of those sand-haunting Rakshasas, which glitter in the distance on the dark desert like drops of water on the leaf of a black lotus. And all night he lies and watches them, as a bird watches the eyes of a snake. Then in the early dawn, as the morning begins to glimmer in the distance on the rim of the world, he sees far away in the air two dark specks in the sky. And as he gazes, they grow larger and rapidly approach him, sending back to him, like mirrors, the red rays of the rising sun.
Why, they're birds of some kind. Swans, I think. Yes, they're silver swans, and they carry in their bills the body of a third, a swan of gold. Wow, I can't believe my eyes. And they're going to settle on this mountaintop. Hail, fair birds. Fair birds. From where have you come, and where do you go, and what is this dead golden body that you carry as you go? And do you have room for one more? And do you have room for one more? He says that they're carrying home the body of their king, and that they must bear him ever onward swiftly to his own country. I beg your pardon. Oh, and that the funeral ceremonies may duly be performed. For he died yesterday in the land of the Lotus Jukebox. The Lotus Jukebox! Listen, I've got to get there. Will you please take me there? You won't. Not a chance, huh? Well, look, I am a desperate man. I beg you to carry me to that land. Otherwise you're going to have to continue without the body of your king. For my sword is very sharp, you see. Nope. You have to give me your word. Or your honk, anyway. Swear.
It's a great scene, isn't it?
Swear an oath that you'll carry me to that land. No dropping me somewhere halfway or anything like that. Good. Let's go.
And so the swans bind themselves to him by an oath. And Jack takes hold of them by the neck, one in each hand. And they stretch out their necks and fly away with him over the desert. And he leaves far behind him the eyes of the Rakshasas glowing in the sand as if with rage to see him escape. After a long while, they come down to the edge of the desert. Jack looks down and sees, far below him, the blue sea shimmering like the eyes of the goddess he had seen floating in that lotus pool. And at a distance in the water, like a dusky jewel on a purple carpet, he sees an island with a city on it.
Tell me, what is that island I see below me? You mean it's finally the land of the Lotus Jukebox?
In his delight...
Whoopee!
In his delight, Jack lets go and claps his hands and falls like a stone into the sea. Should we continue on with this?
You're all fired.
Hail, fair bird.
The swans give one final comment and return swiftly over the desert to the body which they had left upon the hill. But Jack rises out of the water like a cork and sees before him that long sought for land. And he shouts for joy.
Joy? Joy?
And begins. In his delight, Jack lets go and claps his hands
Whoopee!
And falls like a stone into the sea. The swans give one final comment and return swiftly over the desert to the body which they had left upon the hill. But Jack rises out of the water like a cork and sees before him that long sought for land. And he shouts for joy and begins to swim in that direction. And his pith helmet comes spinning out of the sky like a frisbee and lands just ahead of him. And he swims all day. And at last, though with difficulty, he reaches the shore, his strength almost gone. And he creeps out of the sea as the sun goes down. And overcome with weariness, he lays down upon the sand and falls asleep. And all night long he sleeps, and all day. And when the moon rises again, full and round, as if to see whether he was still there, he awakes.
Well. Oh. I'm finally at my journey's end. Why I'm here, I don't know. Or how I'm going to get back, I don't know. But for whatever reason, since that first day I set foot in Inverness, it's been my fate to pursue this jukebox and find its source.
And so he goes up from the shore and through the streets of the city that lay before him, black and white in the rays of the silver moon. But he meets nobody. It is as empty and dark as a barren womb, and silent as a stone incarnation of the spirit of death. And as he wanders up and down, he comes at last to a great palace, whose doors stand wide open, as though to say, come in.
That's very strange.
He goes in and passes along, wandering with echoing steps from room to room. Then he enters a door and finds himself in a vast hall, whose walls are pierced with tall windows through which the moonlight falls, cold as camphor, on moonstones that hang in clusters from the roof. And from them the nectar falls slowly, drop by drop, upon the floor. And at the far end of the room, on a golden couch, he sees, lying, a dead body, covered with a white pall.
Who can it be that lies here? Alone in this empty hall.
And he moves on slowly, through the lights of the windows and the shadows of the walls, till he comes up to the end of the hall and stands beside the couch. And he stoops down over the body and lifts up the edge of the pall and uncovers the face.
Oh, no. It's the Madonna Vampira.
Thank you.
Tune in at this same time tomorrow when you'll hear...
Well, I think I still have one nickel left. Yeah. Oh, well. Here goes. Most of these holy songs I've never heard before. Oh, here's one that sounds interesting. I'll try this. A1.
The Fourth Tower is produced by ZBS Media.